it is time once again, January 30th, 2016, times for Constitution Radio with Douglas V. Gibbs right here on KMET 1490 AM. And I guess I should mention the other gentlemen that are with me, since they do participate, especially the guy up there in the northwest United States. So you said southwest corner, you're in the northwest corner. So we're really the up and down of politics. Is that pretty much it, Jasmius?
Well, the yin and the yang, perhaps.
Yeah. And then we got someone who comes all the way in from L.A. County just to be a part of the KMET team right here in the Pass area, driving all the way out to what he considers to be the desert. And that would be Mr. Alex Ferguson.
Yeah, ain't this a desert?
Yeah, that's, well, I remember him saying, I know, see, I told you it was a desert, what was that? A tumbleweed smacked into my car.
Caught it right on the front end. It was as big as the car.
Well, at least your car didn't roll away with it.
Yeah. You all wrapped up into it. Yeah, I got a new light bulb for this light up here. Now I feel like I need a second light. So for those of you who are watching on the television screen on the, well, I should say computer screen, watching KMET TV, go to KMET1490.com. And
you got a flashlight? You got a flashlight handy?
Yeah,
we could turn it into Constitution Witch Project.
Yeah. So what you're saying is I could like put the light underneath me and then start crying.
Either that, or start telling horror stories.
I guess I could do that. So we could get the light like this. Huh?
Yeah. It's like
yeah. Okay. For those of you guys who are listening, you have no clue what we're talking about.
The All-Star Collision Horror Stories of the Week. That's what we should start
that's
calling
it. Yeah. Now, that was a flashlight on my cell phone, for those of you who are wondering. Okay.
Oh.
Constitution Radio this week. We got a lot to talk about. We began our conversation on American Daily Review at blogtalkradio.com/American Daily Review, the two-hour, predecessor. No, what's the
prelude.
Right? Prelude. There we go. Yeah. See, I've never liked the word prelude. It sounds like a drug. Would that be quaaludes? Is it prelude?
Well, they're the drugs you take first.
And we went through stories 16 through 6. We got 5 stories left. So we're going to begin with Islam, Something Wicked This Way Comes. And by the way, for those of you who are paying attention, or will notice, I'll point it out to you. We kind of have a sci-fi theme today. And we had fun with the early ones. But my favorite of all of them was Do Democrats Dream of Communist Sheep? That's my favorite of all of them. So.
Hey, I wish you hadn't brought sheep into the discussion, because that's just distracting.
That's just distracting. All right, Something Wicked This Way Comes. We're talking about Islam. Now, think about this. Iranian president's headed to France and he's going to defend Charlie Hebdo. You know, that's like in Germany where we're hearing all these imams. Well, they had it, all those rape victims had it coming to them, because the way they dressed. Besides, alcohol is sold. It's all alcohol's fault. If you get rid of alcohol, why, there won't be rapes. Now, and you pointed this out in the article. During Prohibition, did rapes stop? Sexual assaults, did that stop during Prohibition? I just want to know.
Well, understand the context of this. Now, we're talking about Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. And he's on a goodwill tour of Europe to fire up all the business that European countries want to resume doing with the Islamic Empire of Iran, as I refer to it. And so he's going around, goodwill tours, soft peddling the Iranians, what they're really doing. And one of his first stops was at the Vatican. Pope Francis asked President Rouhani to work for peace in the Middle East and to stop the spread of terrorism. He's asking this of the Iranian president, ladies and gentlemen. And now that's the context in which Rouhani, before he went, his next stop was France. He was going to Paris. And Rouhani said that, in essence, that rather than condemning the Charlie Hebdo terrorist attack, He said that it's more important to respect religions, i.e. Islam, than it is to respect free speech. So, in effect, he defended the Charlie Hebdo terrorist attacks from a year ago before he went to Paris.
Well, that's what tyranny does. I mean, how many times have you seen Obama defend his tyranny? Not that I'm trying to compare him to a Muslim.
Oh, of course not. But I mean,
and the problem is, well, here's the problem is, on top of the fact that you've got the Muslims defending their actions, but then you have the Christian leader, if you want to consider Pope Francis such, also defending their actions. He thinks you can work with Iran. He thinks that they can be trusted. He thinks that this leader who's defending Hebdo is someone you can work with and trust. And he met with the Iranian president, matter of fact, and asked Tehran to work with the other Middle Eastern states to promote peace and stop the spread of terrorism and arms trafficking. Iran is the primary source of the war, terrorism, and arms trafficking.
If you only knew the power of the dark side.
The purpose of terrorism is terror, and the purpose of terror is to cause good people to be delusional, to interfere with their thinking process, to make victims out of them before you even fight them.
Well, you want to talk about delusionalism, ladies and gentlemen. This is now. A story came out this week that, in fact, some European leaders are saying that the European Union may be as little as 6 to 8 weeks from collapse over this influx of Muslim refugees, quote-unquote. We talked last week about how Sweden's answer to the Muslim rape gang problem was enhanced sexual education. Switzerland's answer is cartoons. They want to distribute flyers aimed at preventing sexual assaults on women like those that have occurred all across Europe over New Year's Eve.
Yeah. Now, well, if they just listen to the imam, just ban alcohol, they'd be good to go, right?
And
scantily clad clothing, yeah. Just require all the women to wear something across their face and from, the tips of their ankles to up to the tips of their wrist, you'll be good.
And don't let them out without a male relative to escort them.
There you go. And then everything is fine.
Now, this is according to the London Daily Mail. The flyers that they're – and this was patterned after flyers that have already been used, passed out in Austria. Okay. But these flyers, they have, let's see, the Swiss are seeking to use a version of a pamphlet issued in Austria, which includes an image of a man hitting a woman with a large red X over it. Now, first of all, how do we know that X means the same thing to us as it does to the Muslims? I mean, it could be their version of crosshairs, right? It also includes, now, this is the part. There are not words to describe how ridiculous this is. It also includes an image of two men kissing. Understand, this is to be passed out to Muslim refugees, ladies and gentlemen. It also includes an image of two men kissing and two women kissing with a green check mark indicating that homosexual relationships are allowed in the country. The perfect message to send to violent invaders whose culture makes homosexuality a capital crime.
Well, at least the Danish parliament's moving sort of in the right direction. They have a new law that allows police to search asylum seekers. This would be your refugees, migrants, whatever you want to call them, to secure cash and valuables as European leaders continue to call for sealing the Balkan borders. And a lot of your European states, now that it's in their backyard, it's in their face, are beginning to react in what this writer calls drastic ways.
Common sense, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. The continent's biggest migration crisis since the Second World War, with Denmark enacting the law that allows police to seize refugees' assets. And the vote in the Danish parliament was amplified calls to seal the borders of the Balkans, a move that would risk trapping thousands of asylum seekers in Greece, you know, where no one could afford anything. So Greece is basically the next Albania, I'm thinking. And, yeah. And this is something else that cracks me up. This is from the article. The center-right government said the procedure... Now, remember, to them, right-wing is Nazi. The center-right government said the procedure is intended to cover the cost of each asylum seeker's treatment by the state and mimics the handling of Danish citizens on welfare. All right, and then elsewhere in Europe, the Czech Republic and the Slovakian prime ministers, in other words, the two countries that used to be Czechoslovakia, condemned Greece's inability to prevent hundreds of thousands of refugees from moving onwards to northern European countries. Listen to this. They're condemning Greece for its inability to prevent hundreds of thousands of refugees from moving onwards to northern European countries. Grecians can't even feed themselves. How are they going to stop this onslaught?
The Islamist is betting that he can occupy Europe and control it before the Europeans can muster the understanding and the resolve to begin to resist them.
Well, with their lower fertility rate as it is, and their long-term socialism, they're done.
Well, and their agnosticism. They're not even defending themselves against this religious chauvinism.
Well, nature abhors a vacuum.
And the thing is, when it comes to Islam, you know, and this peaceful, and they're trying to give them, you know, the benefit of the doubt and stuff. Meanwhile, you know, when it comes to ISIS and all that, 40 bodies found in a mass grave in Ramadi. You know, you've got that kind of garbage. ISIS printing fake U.S. passports. One of my credit cards, matter of fact, got hacked not too long ago, and the hackers used them for one-way tickets from Muslim countries on airfare. My credit card.
Yeah, I'm sure they thought that was hugely ironic.
It was hugely ironic.
You know what? It's
been since resolved, but...
What I want to know is, how is it the Greeks' fault for not stopping this Muslim influx when the Germans are going absolutely out of their way to totally and completely incentivize it?
Right.
I mean, the Greeks are the front, they're the doormat. They're the front door. I mean, the traffic is pouring across Greece and up right up into Germany because that's their ultimate destination.
Yeah, it's like the cat blaming the dog for the mice getting past them, I guess. I don't know. all right, story number four, militia in Oregon, war of the words and a mote in Bundy's eye. Now, some people are calling this our generation's Lexington Green. Now, we said early on that the militia in Oregon, from a constitutional point of view, about the ownership of the land and federal tyranny and all this other stuff, that they are in the right. But being right is not enough. Now, that said, we've found out, and we talked about this last week, about FBI agents posing as militia members and acting in a manner to try to embarrass the militia, and also cameras, hidden federal cameras, watching their every move. Four film cameras were found, and now on their way to an event, vehicle was stopped with the Bundy brothers and other people. And a rancher, an Arizona rancher, was killed by the police. Now, here's the question. Who created the situation where someone would be shot, where there was gunfire? Did the militia members in that vehicle act in a manner that was aggressive, or were the FBI or law enforcement, state police, aggressive? What was the cause? Now, if you watch the video... Now, one side will tell you, well, the rancher who got killed, his hands were up. He was shot in cold blood. Others were saying police were nervous. He was reaching into his pocket for a firearm, and so they shot out of defense. In the video, it does look like that rancher reaches into his pocket, but it doesn't look like it's in the manner in which one would to retrieve a firearm. So you tell me, what was your observation, Mr. Jasmius.
Well, I think, as I've been saying all along, with what I refer to as the Second Battle of Bundy Hill, the Oregon occupation of the or the occupation of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, that the Bundys and their friends, they, by their own rhetoric and their rhetoric is being now used against them in court. They created their own. They buried themselves. They created their own reputation as being extreme and violent, and now it's being exaggerated and used against them. But they created that their own reputation, and so when that car was stopped, and by the way, the gentleman that was killed was their spokesman, Robert Lavoie Finnicum. If you watch the video, he does appear to reach into his jacket. Now, what he was reaching for, we'll never know. Maybe it was his cell phone. Maybe it was he was taking out his wallet to show in case he was asked to show ID, or maybe he was reaching for a firearm. We don't know. But he did go out of his way over the course of the past month to say that he was armed,
and that he was willing to die for his cause.
I just think that this was something that sounded good on paper. It sounded, you know the term romanticism. It sounded romantic. This is the 21st century Lexington and Concord. Well, as it turned out, not so much.
Yeah, it's more like the Boston Massacre.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah,
It wasn't thought through very well.
Yeah, well, and once again, we always talk about how perception's the key. Being right is not enough. Perception is the key. You got to win in the court of public opinion.
Yeah, it's about education and persuasion. It's not about because you know there's a line that from a George Carlin bit where he said that talking about flamethrowers, he said, Well, we don't have the flamethrowers. The Army has the flamethrowers. I'd say we're screwed if we have to go up against the Army. And that's pretty much what they were looking at here. Now, the Second Amendment says what it says. The right to bear and keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, period. But the government's always going to have more and bigger guns than we will.
Well, they have bigger guns, not more. All right, that said, let's go to break. When we return, we've got, President Obama's royal decrees, Hillary's emails, and yes, we're going to discuss Mr. Trump. And as usual, I for the most part, I'm in agreement with you, but not in full agreement. It may get interesting. We'll see. Don't go anywhere, folks. When we return after this break, more on Constitution Radio with Douglas V. Gibbs. Help me fight the good fight. This radio program is funded by advertising dollars. So, if you are a business, add Constitution Radio with Douglas V. Gibbs to your business portfolio. If you are a listener, become a patron of the businesses advertising on this program. Without advertising, your weekend dose of truth ends. With more advertising, Constitution Radio with Douglas V. Gibbs grows, and we will be on the way to win the battle to restore the Republic. To learn more, email us at constitutionspeaker@yahoo.com. Or visit DouglasVGibbs.com.
The true patriots of All-Star Collision have been proudly serving the Inland Empire for over 20 years. Built on honesty, integrity, quality, and old-fashioned customer service, we offer lifetime warranties for our work, and every vehicle serviced by All-Star Collision is washed, detailed, the headlights polished, fluids are checked and topped off, safety checked, and returned in showroom condition. We offer free estimates, are approved by major insurance companies, and accept all claims for all cars and trucks. We use computerized frame straightening to factory specifications, offer fiberglass body repair and paint, free local pickup and delivery, and after-hours towing. Mention this radio program at drop-off and receive $100 off or a free rental car for up to 5 days during your repair. Visit us at allstarci.com or at 522 Railroad Street in Corona. Call us at 951-279-9161. We are the kings of wreck and roll.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Our records indicate you've been lied to. Welcome to the truth. Douglas V. Gibbs.
All I'm offering is the truth. Nothing more.
What's your constitutional IQ? Your quest to learn the Constitution can be fun for the whole family. Learn about the Constitution as you play the Constitution Quest board game. Learn more at ConstitutionQuest.com.
Yeah, what the heck? We never talk about him. Let's drag him into the conversation.
Yeah, you know, and let's start with the last story on this list, because it just oozes of unconstitutionality. And I use the word oozes loosely. Obama illegally decrees Cuban embargo easings while Cuban illegal aliens pour into U.S. And I love the image you used. It's got Obama sniffing a cigar. I'm going to assume the thought here is that it's a Cuban cigar. Now, remember, this is a guy who sees communists as the allies, Muslims as the allies, and Israel as the greatest threat, aside from maybe Christians. The communists ruled – I'm reading with your inserted words there. Let's back up. The United States on Tuesday announced changes to its sanctions on Cuba, lifting export payment. Now, understand, this starts the United States. It makes it sound like the United States all agreed upon this, that all parts of government agreed upon this. What you find out is, no, it was the one's decision, that he decided to act without Congress. I don't recall Congress getting involved. I don't recall them saying, okay, the embargo's done or sanctions are done or restrictions are removed. I don't remember seeing that. And Article 1, Section 1, all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in the United States. And there's this thing about advise and consent powers regarding the Senate and anything the president does regarding appointments, treaties, and so on and so forth. I don't recall Congress ever being involved in this. No. But apparently Cuba, the only thing he has done is given Cuba a preferred status or something like
most Nixon, favored nation.
Yeah, that like Nixon gave to China. That's what I'm half expecting next.
Well, you know, we've just gotten so accustomed to this. I mean, this is how Obama does it. This is how the left does it. They do it. They don't do it once. They do it a bunch of times. They just blitz you until you're just so overwhelmed that you just get numb, or you just throw up your hands and in despair and say, well, you know, it becomes the new normal. I coined that term, oh gosh, 6.5 years ago, that this is going to be the new normal, folks. You better get used to it. And now, I mean, after the immigration proclamation and after DACA and after enacting cap and trade by executive order or executive branch regulation, we've just gotten so accustomed, so acclimated to Obama doing these things. He is legislating from the White House, and it's unconstitutional. He does not have that legal authority.
And this is no surprise. Mr. Obama is the anti-American president, in my opinion. And the problem is, when he calls the GOP of having a mean-spirited, unright, recognizable vision for the United States, he's really projecting. It's really the reality of his own party and him. This unrecognizable vision that strays so far from the Constitution, the Democrat Party agenda has more in common with the policies of old Soviet Russia than it does with the limiting principles of the American system. And it was pretty frustrating to watch this happen. I have people all the time say, well, gosh, Doug, and more I learn about the Constitution, the angrier I get. You must be really pissed. Yeah, I am. Alex, what's your thoughts about President Obama unilaterally deciding Cuba might as well be a favored nation.
Well, Obama has revealed over the years who his allies are. His allies are Iran, Communist Cuba,
Putin.
Putin, yeah. These are the traditional and logical enemies of the United States. These are the people that want to destroy us. And he makes common culture with them.
Now we've talked about on here that President Obama believes that being president of the United States is beneath him. And we've always been half expecting he'll become UN secretary or emperor of the world. But Hillary was asked a question and thought it was a good idea for something else, which is even more frightening. Could
Supreme
you imagine
Court.
Barack Obama as a justice on the Supreme Court?
I can imagine it in a nightmare. How about you, Jasmine?
Well, see, the context in which this comes, and I'll tell you what it is. Now, I've been saying for the entire campaign, go back to last April when Hillary Clinton declared her second run at the White House, that she has not acted like the front runner for one single solitary moment. She knows. Last time she could write it off is in 2008 is a fluke, or Barack Obama was just, you know, they came along at the right place at the right time, and just, you know, what is she going to do? But this time it's going to all just fall right into her lap, and now she's learning that no, last time wasn't a fluke. She's just a terrible candidate, and now she's got Emailgate, and Emailgate is percolating higher and higher and higher, and there's more and more talk of Mrs. Clinton being criminally indicted in this scandal.
Yeah, which brings us to story number two. Some Hillary emails go beyond where any politician has gone before.
Not quite finished yet. So that's the context for this person at this town hall meeting in Iowa asking Hillary Clinton whether Barack Obama would be a good Supreme Court choice. And now, does that not sound like a bribe in the making?
Perhaps. You mean for a pardon?
Well, pardon, just to not prosecute her. I mean, that's what it sounds like to me.
Well, the thing is, with Hillary Clinton, is the FBI, the State Department, Inspector General, I mean, the emails were of the most secretive classified programs. It was filled with classified information. Email correspondence from her time as Secretary of State did include top secret material. And Hillary Clinton and Hillary Clinton's response has more or less been, what difference does it make? And part of the reason for that response is because, remember, these people think they're above the law. They don't understand what the big deal is. Hey, it was necessary for us to do the things we got to do.
Well,
it's the Democrat Party's version of taquilla.
To evade, because see, the only secrets they care about preserving are hiding what they're doing from legitimate congressional oversight. That's what this was all about. And it's 1,340 and counting emails that had classified information, including beyond top secret, special access programs, human intelligence. We talked about that last week, where people could die. Agents, deep cover agents, double agents on the other side that are feeding us intelligence. They could die. Could have. It's all past tense now.
And the thing is, wasn't just that this information was in her emails, but it was purposeful, and she was making deals. They were cutting and pasting in such a way, and then making sure the enemy could hack in and get this information.
And that is a conspiracy. Her top lieutenants, Huma Abedin, Mrs. Wiener, and Cheryl Mills and Jake Sullivan, they were cutting and pasting. Because see, there are two different email communication networks in the federal government. One is for classified information, and one is for non-classified information that goes outside the government. Well, in order to get this classified information to Hillary Clinton and her homebrew email server, they had to cut and paste from the classified network to the unclassified network. So they're part of this, and they are. It is a conspiracy. It's exactly what it was,
and it was done. No, this. How do you give the enemy top secret information and get away with it without actually giving it to them by putting it in a place where they could hack into it and access it? That's what was happening. That, and she was doing it on purpose, and I think there was payouts from foreign governments for her to do this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What concerns me slightly is that they say now there are 20 emails that cannot be released to anyone.
And they're so secretive, yeah.
My question is, are those the emails in which Hillary Clinton told Benghazi to stand down? And we'll never know.
Could very well be.
And the exact quote from the intelligence community is, too damaging to national security to release under any circumstances.
Because they could connect dots. They could learn from the redacted emails. Because the Russians...
Or they could put the U.S. even greater danger than she put us.
Yeah, I'm sure the Russians, the Chinese... The Chi-Coms, the Iranians, I'm sure they already have their own copies, their own copies
of her
email.
Well, we know the Chinese do.
So they could go back into that archive and they could find these emails, and it would provide possibly greater context and provide greater clues for secrets that maybe they haven't quite figured out yet.
It's just like the Venona intercepts. The only people not on the list to know what was in them is the American people. Everybody else has a front row seat.
Pretty much. Okay, we need to move on. Time for our Book of the Week segment as Alex continues to go through the Black Book of Communism. And spend a few minutes with this, and then we'll go to break after that. And then when we come back, it'll be Constitution Quest Question of the Week and a discussion about Mr. Trump. So, Black Book of Communism is still where we're at, right?
It's still 750 pages, and it's going to take forever to go through it, but it's very, very definitely worthwhile. Before I begin, however, I would like to read a coincidental dedication to my book, The Capitalist Manifesto, in which I say, a Russian author recently wrote of his sister's survival during the man-made famine that Stalin created while trading his people's wheat for industrial machinery. The little girl survived by stealing and eating one goldfish each night from her commune's ornamental fish tank. This book is not dedicated to her, however, nor to the millions of less fortunate Russian children who could not find so much as a raw goldfish to eat, children who ate bark and dirt and who died in the arms of their starving mothers. No, this book is not dedicated to them, but rather to the American leftists who swore that no such thing was happening. For it was they who protected Stalin from the pressure of an outraged world opinion that might have forced him to feed his own hungry people, just as they later protected Mao Zedong, Pol Pot, and dozens more like them. They are still at it today, erasing the names of the starved and murdered from Cambodia to Afghanistan and from Cuba to Peru. Yes, let's hear it for the leftist legions of Let's Pretend, dancing on the graves of the forgotten and singing the praises of international socialism. Now, I have a quote here from Stalin. He says, if you kill one person, you're called a murderer. But kill a million people and it's a statistic. Okay? We're talking slaughter, torture,
right,
rape, genocide on such a scale that you can't even begin to get it into your brain. Rudolf Hess said that the concentration camps that he and his Nazi accomplices developed were modeled on the Soviet concentration camps. The Soviets were, as we've said, were requisitioning more grain from its grain-producing areas than they raised.
And the Nazis were doing this while claiming to be the opposite of communism.
I'm saying that they used the prisoner of war camp barracks as death camps.
Right.
And they specifically said that these were death camps. It says here the origin of the death camps came as the Bolsheviks were at war with their own people. And this is what happens when the Reds take over. They start off, every time, they start off talking about land redistribution. They're going to, if the peasants will help them rise up against the system, then they will redistribute the land to the peasants. So the peasants go along with it. It takes about 10 years for the redistribution process to take place. At the end of the 10 years, the government turns around to the peasants and say, okay, all you people are now going to live in barracks. Nobody owns any land. It's all government property. And the peasants say, wait a minute, you promised us title to the land. And the government says, you've already demonstrated that title to land is meaningless. Therefore, just as the original owners were forced to give up their title to the land, you are too. Now, when they started this, the terror, the Red Terror that killed 5 million people, and by the way, they always say Stalin was the villain. If Lenin had just lived, Lenin and Trotsky murdered as many people as the Nazis. The first thing they did was institute gun control.
And also that brings to mind a comment we make here often. Equity does not equal equality.
Well, and redistribution equals theft.
Well, absolutely. And you know, Samuel Adams called it the schemes of leveling.
Lenin, when you talk about Marxism-Leninism, and we've got a million college professors in this country who now call themselves Marxist-Leninists, the reason Leninism came in was Marxism doesn't work. You cannot operate without some kind of profit system unless you substitute something else. And what Lenin substituted was terror, just massive, massive terror.
And the new economic policy.
And the new okay, final words on it.
Now, these concentration camps, these death camps, the one guy is quoted as saying, these people, the women, the children, the old people, are living in barracks with no blankets, no warm clothing. They're freezing in the October mud. And the guards are treating the women like prostitutes. You got to remember that back in World War II, when the Soviets took over Berlin, they raped every female in that city. The gangs that did the requisition were the lowest scum on earth. They stayed drunk, they loaded up on cocaine, and they raped everything that moved.
All right, we gotta wrap it up there. As always, Alex, incredible commentary and never enough time. When we return, the Constitution Quest question of the week and a discussion about Mr. Trump. You don't want to miss it. We'll be right back.
You got a dent in your door, a scratch in your fender, or a scratch in your door and a dent in your fender. If you need auto detailing, if you need fire shooting decals on the side of your car, if you need a rally stripe right down the middle of your hardtop, I don't care what it is. The Patriots at All Star Collision are the place you want to go. They're the only place to go. 522 Railroad Street in Corona. Web address allstarci.com to see all that they do and what they're all about. Phone number 951-279-9160. One All-Star Collision, the kings of rock and roll.
Hello. the socialists. You will be assimilated. Your individual liberties, personal freedoms, and mental individuality will be added to our own. Resistance is futile.
We're the Banning Beaumont Cherry Valley Tea Party, and we're active in your area. Check us out on Conservative Voice Radio, Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. on this same station, 1490. Join us for one of our weekly meetings, Tuesdays at 8 a.m. and the second Thursday of each month, 6 p.m. at the Farmhouse Restaurant in Banning. Or call us at 1-800-350-2637, extension 912.
And welcome back, Constitution Radio with Douglas V. Gibbs. That last ad for the Banning Beaumont Cherry Valley Tea Party, I want to remind people that the time has changed for the Thursday night meetings to 5 o'clock. So even though the ad says 6, we still need to change that ad. They now start their Thursday night meetings at 5. Okay, Constitution Quest, question of the week, comes from one of the game cards in Constitution Quest game. This is from one of the Founders and Facts cards, and here's the question. The framers of the Constitution implemented an idea known as separation of powers, which A, splits power between the people and government officials, B, separates outgoing government officials from their former positions, or C, gives different powers to each branch of government.
C.
A very quick C from Alex's position. Sean?
I'll go with C also.
All right. He's going to follow the leader. Jasmius.
C.
C. Gives different powers to each branch of government. In other words, the Congress has the legislative powers, the executive has the executive powers, judicial branch has the judicial powers.
Yeah, what remember when it was actually like that?
Yeah, well, yeah, at one time it was. Article 1, Section 1, all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress. That means that all legislative powers, the powers to make law, modify law, or repeal law, only begins at Congress. It doesn't say belongs to Congress except when the president decrees something or anything like that. So it's like with these executive orders. The reason why constitutionalists are so upset about Obama's executive orders is because they largely are used to modify law, to go around Congress when Congress doesn't do what he wants. Regulatory agencies, same thing. And then we have a judicial branch who strikes down laws they disagree with, even state laws. They negative state laws even, and they act legislatively from the bench. Once again, Article 1, Section 1, which is a key component in the idea or the concept of separation of powers, states that all legislative powers belong to the legislative branch. Congress, and when it comes to judicial branch, they don't have executive powers or legislative powers. Or that goes back to Andrew Jackson's comment one time when the Supreme Court made a ruling, and he said, okay, the Supreme Court has ruled, let's see them enforce it.
Yeah, they Roger can't. Taney. Yeah, no, was that, no, it was Chief Justice Marshall, John Marshall.
Marshall. Tail end of Marshall's reign.
He has rendered his decision. Now let him enforce it.
There you go. All right. All right. Time for Mr. Trump. Now, first of all, there seems to be this thought out there that Mr. Trump is afraid of Megyn Kelly, that he did not go to the last debate. He did not appear on it because of his fear of Megyn Kelly. Now, real quick before I say anything, remember, I'm the guy that says about Trump that I like what he says. I don't necessarily know if he believes what he says or he can be trusted. That said, I believe that there is a possibility that he believes what he says, unlike Jasmius or Alex, who pretty much think he's a lion sack of... But anyway, now the question is, did he run away from Megyn Kelly and run away from the Fox News debate? Or was Trump being Trump, which always does something different? He likes to do things that are outside the norm. He likes to shock and awe. And what he wound up doing, and he hurriedly put it together, was a veterans event right up the road, basically, from that debate at the same time. It did a live pro-veteran event, and I watched the video of it. And he basically said, hey, I thought this was more important than a debate. and that is standing behind our veterans. Was it a strategic move? Or was it a bunch of BS? Or was that really his reasoning? Was he just being Trump and being different? Or is he truly afraid of Fox News, Megyn Kelly, or what? Because I saw that you wrote quite a bit that he's running from Megyn Kelly. He's afraid of. I don't think Trump fears anybody or anything for the most part.
Well, this goes back to the first debate back in August when Megyn Kelly, whom he's been. I mean, I posted the video of an interview that he had with Megyn Kelly back four years ago, where he was complimentary to her, and he said I could never hold a candle to you as a debate moderator. And but back in August, Megyn Kelly challenged him. Nobody challenges Trump and gets away with it. So he did what he did to her and attacked her on Twitter and called her a lightweight and a bimbo and whatever else, and other things that he said that I won't repeat on the air here. And so when we came into this Fox News debate, I think he made a power play to try to get to dominate Fox News, get Fox News to pull Megyn Kelly from the moderator panel. They refused to do it. So then he pivoted off of that and decided, well, I'm going to hold this veterans event using veterans as political props, and I'm going to outdraw the Fox News debate. They're all losers. They're all also rans. I'm going to hold this event and compete against the debate. Well, Fox News actually got better ratings for that debate than the previous one, not the one back in August, but the one I think it was on CNN. So they still did pretty good ratings. Now, you could make the argument. Now, there's been a lot of talk about how Trump he's taken a big chance by no showing the debate. You could make the argument that by doing what he did, because did you see the videos that on illegal immigration of what Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio had previously said? In the past, that made them look like they were kind of flip flopping on immigration. Well, she challenged them too,
right?
As I'm expecting Trump to start tweeting out about how wow, Megyn Kelly is a great journalist after all. Look what she did to Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz on illegal immigration. I agree with
the interesting thing was without Trump there, Rubio was the one that essentially won that debate. And I think from the establishment's point of view, that's who they want. And that's who we're going to start seeing a McCain-like push from.
Well, perhaps. I mean, Rubio was very aggressive. He was throwing out red meat right and left. Ted Cruz, Ted Cruz stumbled a bit. I think he was – see, before that debate, I was recommending that Ted Cruz should focus on his closing argument to Iowa voters as to why they should vote for him. Ignore Trump. Don't mention Trump. Cruz did the opposite. He went out of his way to do his Trump impression, and it didn't come off real well. In fact, he tried to – reprise, remember the great moment that he had in the CNBC debate where the moderators were attacking the candidates?
Now, Cruz's decision to go in that manner to me is indicative of his decision-making shortfalls. Even though ideologically I think he's the best candidate left, I don't think that he's the best candidate in the sense of strategies and abilities. I think he has a great shortcoming when it comes to a leadership type of role, he's a senator. He's never held an executive position, and so I think that what we saw was indicative of his poor decision making skills when it comes to how to launch an attack and how to attack. Now, all of you people that love Cruz, don't decide I'm a communist because I said something against Cruz. I know that happens every time. Every time I mention his ineligibility, I'm suddenly some type of communist. How dare I? And like I said, I like Cruz. I think he's a fantastic senator. And, I believe ideologically he's our best candidate. But I don't necessarily think he's our best candidate, not only eligibility-wise, but in the sense of experience executively. Of course, our best candidate is long gone. That was Scott Walker, and he was very popular in the beginning, but The problem with Scott was simply that he doesn't have what the voters are looking for, which is being a loudmouth guy who they think looks presidential. Unfortunately, Trump is fitting that bill for the charisma-hungry voters.
Well, Trump is, above all else, a showman. He will say or do anything that he has to do to get
what he wants.
He knows
how to market himself.
And he knows how to market himself. It's all about entertainment. Politics and entertainment have merged.
Mm-hmm.
There's no longer. I mean, talking about conservative reforms. You heard the term reformicons. Like Paul Ryan is in that category, who have substantive policy proposals, but it's all that boring stuff.
Now we're down to only policies. A couple minutes here, and I want to give Alex a chance to say something about this. So, Alex, let me give you this last minute of conversation.
Yeah, I was talking about terror producing delusion. And I'm afraid that the Trump candidacy is an example of that. The people are so terrorized by, and legitimately terrorized by ISIS and Moscow and all that, that they're looking for somebody to as a savior. And this guy, this kind of Hollywood trumped up.
Well, they're looking for this powerful leader. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, I'm watching my language here. this kind of nonsense that we're getting from Trump, where he goes one way and then he goes another way, and he insults people like a bully. People are attracted to that because.
Well, and I
hate to stop you. We're out of time. We've got to end the show. So plug yourself, Jasmius.
Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, Hard Starboard Radio airs at blogtalkradio.com/HSR Network, and I write at politicalpistachio.com.
Alex?
ConservativeCanonade.org. Visit it, and you'll see.
And I have been your host, Douglas V. Gibbs, douglasvgibbs.com. United we stand, combined we kick butt, and always remember, folks, God bless America, and my friends, God bless you. We'll see you next week.